Hello, and welcome to yet another episode of the Agnostic Salvation Hour. This is your host, Marshall.
And I'm Jennifer.
And I'm Cole.
And I'm Howard.
And like I said, welcome to another show.
You said that.
I did say that, didn't I? I don't have any really thing
to say. Well, we'll just turn it over to Howard.
Yeah.
How
did you have anything you wanted to talk about?
Howard, how are you?
That was that for a segue.
Yeah, that's quite a segue, guys. Yeah. I wanted to talk about on our meetup forums and email listings and whatnot. Been getting a lot of activity from believers.
Ooh.
Yeah, and I just wanted to throw out the idea of the anthropic principle.
Anthropic.
Anthropic. Okay. You need to roll those R's for people.
I love
anthropic.
Because I find arguments surrounding this whole entire subject to be, well, sort of ridiculous and pedantic, really. It's
especially
you know,
pedantic.
Well, I mean, you know, it's like being late to work because you had a 2-hour argument with somebody about the origins of your vehicle or something like that. It just seems really, really counterproductive to anything usable,
yes.
In my opinion.
It's kind of like discussions on free will.
Right.
You know, ultimately, whoever wins that argument, you haven't changed a damn thing.
You haven't changed a damn thing. And plus, and I'm more than willing to say this, is that any arguments that I have about what the actual origins of the universe were prior to the Big Bang, mm-hmm. what or who or they might have been caused by, I have exactly the same amount of answers that any believer does.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I don't fucking know.
Hey, I'm with you.
I do too.
And I guess probably the biggest hang up that I've been seeing in our little email listings and everything like that is I think probably the thing that annoys atheists and agnostics and non-believers and stuff about this particular little argument that gets passed back and forth is the fact that most believers want to say, I do know, and it's God.
Exactly.
And we're basically going to want to tear our hair out every time we hear that.
Well, they're frustrating arguments because, like you said, they don't really change anything. Ultimately, it's just entirely speculation. I mean, you can't prove the existence of a God on a logical syllogism.
And where did that God come from? Did he have a mommy and daddy?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the same arguments.
No.
Does God have a belly button?
No, he's eternal. See,
yeah, he's
see,
eternal,
by
yeah.
by his qualities, he's eternal, Cole.
Oh, that means he's always been, always has, just like the nothing theory.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I got you.
Well, and that's the other thing, that on the flip side, like Howard said, we don't have any more information than they do when that comes to that. You know,
that's true.
Did the universe in fact begin with the Big Bang, or was that just one bang in a series of bangs? You know, I mean, it's ridiculous to even, you know.
Saying that if I claim that there is nothing before the Big Bang is the same as saying there was God before the Big Bang. Because I don't know what the nature of that nothing was any more than you know the nature of this being that you're talking about before the existence that we understand began.
I'm not sure of the nature of this conversation.
Well, but I mean, these are the links at which these conversations start going. And I've seen people like Paul and other people on our email listing, and I feel for the guy because he's writing these.
You feel
these,
the guy?
Yes.
Yeah.
Feel for the guy. I haven't felt up a guy in.
Okay. Well, I'm better
well,
about that. How about
well,
them Chiefs?
Well, a couple of minutes now. But anyway. Anyway, so, yeah, I mean, you know, he's writing paragraphs after paragraph to some of our believer friends, and I got to feel that he's probably drinking himself to sleep at night after these conversations.
Yeah,
who, Paul?
Yeah.
No, well, Paul told me he only drinks 3 shots of alcohol a week, and
uh-huh.
the rest of the bottle he throws away. And I said, what? I think that's a crime.
Alcohol Kansas. Abuse. So,
why does he throw the rest of the bottle away?
Because he doesn't want to be tempted.
He says he'll drink it if it's around.
Three shots of alcohol. I spill more than that.
Wait. Did you say Tom or Paul?
Paul.
Paul?
I like Paul. Paul's cute.
Paul. Okay. Paul's one of ours.
Yesterday you said I was cute,
Cole. Huh?
Wow.
Yesterday you said I was cute.
You are cute.
So anyway, you know, I can't even bother myself to even engage in these arguments, to be honest with you, because like you said, not only do we not know, I don't even care.
I don't either. So why are we talking about this?
I think it boils down to the whole idea of a lot of believers have this feeling that if I choose to believe that the universe came about because of chance or came about because of any of the other reasons I can think of that make more sense than it coming about because of some extremely intelligent, hugely complicated being that decided to make the universe that we know, that somehow that means that the universe is meaningless.
Yeah.
They cannot separate attributing meaning to your own life by your own will and having meaning outside of that.
And ultimately, if right. there is no God, then I'm not special. As
right.
I kind of used to feel actually when I was a Christian.
And really? What I always like to say is, you're special, just like everybody else.
That's
my grandmother
right.
told me I was special all the time.
Well, and ultimately, it's just another version of the God of the Gaps argument that science could have adopted thousands of years ago. You know, with where does lightning come from, or where do various other things come from? And literally, not that long ago in human history, the answer to the question where does lightning come from was God, until
sure.
we developed more information. And
where does thunder come from?
Where does well,
Thor?
Well, but I think the issue is with this question is I don't think we'll ever be able to answer the question. I just don't think it's going to happen. You know, I don't think that we're ever going to be able to answer that question. And I hesitate to say that it's not important to keep exploring.
I'm not sure if I entirely agree with that, Jim.
Yeah, I don't know. I just don't think
the reason why.
You know,
well, sorry, go ahead.
But I was just saying. But I guess the thing is like it shouldn't stop us searching, trying to seek out the answer at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I just I think it's I don't know.
Well, and just, I know that Lee Strobel and William Craig do argue that there's no point in continuing the search. We already have the answer. It's God, and any continued efforts to find an answer to the origins of the universe is just an attempt to.
Do they in fact say that?
Yes, they do.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Yeah, they do. They literally say
yeah,
that. That's know. Modern science, modern cosmology is
what
an
a couple
atheistic,
of shitbirds.
Yeah, they're yep. It's an atheistic agenda to eliminate God from the equation.
But if God's out there, then we'll find him and they'll be vindicated.
Right.
So, you know,
right.
that makes absolutely no sense. It's like, let's stop looking because, you know.
Well, according to the Bible, he exists somewhere above the clouds. So that's where we should begin our search for God.
Above the clouds.
Yeah.
Well, to me, that says they know their position is incorrect then.
Yeah.
If they're saying, don't
well,
look.
It was a metaphor. Look. When they said he lives above the clouds.
Pay no heed to the man behind the curtain.
So anyway, I'm just – that's why I haven't even been participating in that particular discussion is because I just don't care. Even if you came up with this perfect argument proving that somehow God exists, who cares? Which God?
I
it's
agree.
Not Jesus. It's not Allah. It's not Zeus or Apollos or – any of those other gods. At best, we have some unknown creator of the universe who could just be a scientist with a lab coat on, as speculated by Richard Darwin, I think, in the past.
Well, that's not the case. They got a book. They know the mind of God, and that influences a lot of things here.
You're talking about Earth. The Quran, right?
All of them. The book, the real book, the Christian book, the holy book.
Yeah. So it's just something that I don't even really pay attention to anymore because A, you're not gonna have a conversation with a Christian and somehow convince him that the universe just exists on its own. I don't know of any Christians who have just purely by the science have been converted from Christian to atheist. I don't know. Perhaps you do.
Probably the other way around
no.
too.
No, it's usually.
I mean, leaving religion was probably slow for you, wasn't it?
Well. I think part
yeah,
of what
it really was.
I think part of what helped convert me is throughout my life, I always had been a skeptic about things that I'd run into. And what I eventually got sick of was I got sick of the cognitive dissonance of trying to justify what I was supposed to believe with what I actually knew was true. Mm-hmm. And that got really old. It got boring. And I slowly just let those things go.
Yeah.
Because it didn't make sense anymore.
Well, and once you realize that they were wrong about this thing, then you start to wonder, well, if they're wrong about that, then why do I assume they're right about everything else? And that's kind of the path
right.
I went
right
on a lot of things. Well, speaking of why people leave religion, this came out actually about a year ago, I believe, but I just found it and I found it interesting. Ken Ham, the founder of the Creation Museum, which I find, which I hear is a very interesting place to visit.
Got to make that trip sometime.
Well,
that is one trip we need to all make.
I would love to. I'd really be bothered by the fact that you have to donate, was it $10 or $20
to go through it?
To Creationist. I'd be bothered by that.
Buying a ticket to get in.
I know what we can do. We can all write checks and let them bounce.
Yeah. Let's not do it. The cast of the Agnostic Salvation Hour does not encourage the writing of bad checks.
Speak for yourself, Cindy.
So anyway, he commissioned the American Research Group and former researchers for the Heritage Foundation. And they discovered that the reason that 2/3 of evangelical kids cease being evangelical kids in their mid-20s was not because of the secular agenda or lack of religious education, but rather the people most likely to leave the church were the people who were brought up attending Sunday school and exposed to Christian scripture.
I read the same thing.
Yeah, and which actually I think it's true.
I would completely agree with that.
They're bored with having to have to go all the time.
Well, and
being a product of private education myself, which was an evangelical school, I would completely agree with that. And a lot of the kids that I went to school with growing up are, if not free thinkers of some type, they are very disenfranchised with the entire idea.
Well, and like you said, the more familiar with the scriptures you are, the more you realize just how many indefensible things are in there.
You never have to make up the crazy shit in the Bible.
No, you don't.
No.
No. It's like a Poe's law. You can't satire a fundamentalist or an evangelical because nothing you can say is any weirder than things that they actually say.
Exactly.
But anyway, that's what they found, is that familiarity with evangelical theology and the scriptures is what tends to drive people away from the church. And that's really not surprising to me at all.
No, I've noticed that to be true too, because a lot of the people that we know in the groups and stuff like that, I mean, with a few exceptions, me being one of them, is that, yeah, a lot of them were like, yeah, I read the Bible like 2 or 3 times and was like, yeah, this doesn't make any sense. And they really studied it and really know a lot more than I do. And yeah, they're like, this is crazy.
Oh, I love that.
That is my phone.
Uh-oh.
Chinese food time.
Or they find those inconsistencies and say, "Well, why is it like this here and not here?" And and all those things. And yeah.
Well, I think it was Mark Twain who says the things that scare me about the Bible aren't the things that I don't understand, but it's the things in the Bible that I do understand.
Well, and then on the converse side, the people that I do know that are believers and fancy themselves hardcore believers, they couldn't tell you what scripture, if you asked them about a scripture, they wouldn't be able to tell you.
No.
Interesting that they don't know about other religious groups, like somebody that was talking about, and I said something about Catholics and birth control, and she was like, well, they use birth control. And I'm like, they're not supposed to. And she just looked at me funny, and I was like, yeah, I just didn't even get into the conversation. I was like, whatever, believe what you want, but they're not supposed to do that. So
yeah, people, just to clear this up about Catholics and birth control, the Rhythm Method, or also referred to as natural family planning, it's not birth
works.
Control.
No.
All the people I know that use those methods have one thing in common. They've
got kids.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is true. As a former Catholic seminarian, I can tell you, and they preach that stuff hard. And that was even when I was a devout Catholic, I was always bothered by the absurd obsession that the Catholic Church had to do with the misuse of semen. You know,
your genitalia.
Yeah, it only has one destination. If it goes anywhere else, you're going to hell. And that literally, they wouldn't word it that way, but that literally is Catholic teaching.
What about nocturnal emissions? Were you in trouble for that, or was that an involuntary
thing?
That was
involuntary.
So you were okay.
Yes.
Okay.
If you somehow, I don't know, if you could somehow.
So what if you get really? What if you get really drunk, and then you don't know where it goes?
It's still a sin.
Well, the Catholic Church does not frown upon excessive drinking.
No. I understand. I understand that the drinking part is a sin. I'm on board with that. I'm fine. But what happens after I'm, like, incoherent? I mean, I should be able to do whatever the hell I want. I mean,
first of all, if you think the Catholics believe that drinking is a sin, then you haven't met the Catholics.
Right.
Oh, no, I'm positive they don't. But anyway.
Hey, I'm curious. This survey, is this just this generation? What about the last generation? I mean, was there a lot of people leaving then, too, or is it just this one?
They only interviewed people who were in their 20s.
No. So they haven't done this, like, two decades ago or a decade ago and checked and see what the numbers were leaving then.
No.
I'd just be curious. Because you say
none of those people are alive anymore because they don't believe in doctors.
Well, I'm curious because you were saying in the very beginning that talk with atheists and all this stuff in the media had no influence on this whatsoever. I'd just be curious.
That what had no?
Didn't you say in the beginning of this that there was
secular
no outside,
teaching.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't outside influences. It was inside, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. So I'd be curious about if that was so, then a decade or two or three decades ago, were they leaving at the same number because there was less secular talk at that time?
I doubt that there's any data on that at all.
Well, and then I'd also be curious to know is what happened to those two-thirds. Did they convert to other religions? Did they become agnostics or atheists or apathetic or just what? Because that would be interesting to know as well.
Well, some of the studies that I had read on this said that most of them were not believing in Jesus, not believing in God.
Right.
They just weren't going to church. They were fed up with church. A lot of it was hypocrisy. Some of it just bored them. And I've talked with a lot of young people, too, that don't go to church, and they still stay. They believe.
Right.
And they have little gatherings together in the basements and such.
I think that's a lot of it. I think a lot of this, I think the numbers in this particular survey might be a little off, mainly because a lot of people that I knew that I grew up with who were in very evangelical churches, that's what their parents were, that's what they grew up in, have gone to churches that are considered like postmodern Christianity or what is also referred to as like open theism. I don't know if I've ever mentioned that.
Well, recent studies show that 24% of this age group and above, I think up to 35, maybe 40 years old, also believe in karma, even though they're a Christian. I mean, they're mm-hmm. intermingling.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I think I'm seeing with this new group is like kind of new age stuff.
And that would fit with what I've seen just from friends. I mean, everybody's starting to fit into with this more open theology.
Right.
You know, getting sick of trying to justify the straight up, evangelical fundamentalist bent and mm-hmm. moving on from there, which is a natural evolution, I think, that I would expect to see in any religion.
I know several Christians that are 40s, 50s, that they won't miss a day of not reading their horoscope. I mean, it's unbelievable to watch these people and go, what are you reading it? You know?
Yeah.
It's amazing. It's always
and
right.
And they all fit, too. I mean, it doesn't make any difference.
You can
put your hand over one of them and give it to them. Oh, yeah, yeah, that's me. Oh, yeah.
I think that scares me more than actually religion is the woo fact, the woo. And people who get into the woo, I'm like, whoa, come on now.
The woo doesn't scare me. I just think it's silly.
Well, I like the mojo.
The woo bothers me when it's dealing with medical stuff.
Yeah.
You know, when
true.
People are telling you water and telling you it's got like, you know, the homeopathy, that kind of stuff. That's definitely woo and that's dangerous. But
speaking of woo, I was at the table with a bunch of coworkers having lunch, and one of the guys was talking about how he has chronic problems with, carpal tunnel muscle spasms in his arms and stuff like that from typing and that sort of thing.
Sure.
He's in his 50s, and he was basically talking about having to go to the doctor and get cortisone treatments to his spinal column, basically. What they do is, I guess, they try to deaden or alleviate the nerves by putting cortisone in particular nerve endings mm-hmm. on your spinal column, which is news to me. I've never heard of this, but sounds like a treatment that might work. And instantly, one of the gals at the table started telling him, well, you know, boy, I wouldn't do that anymore. That sounds really painful. And he was like, yeah, it was painful. It's like, well, you should just do acupuncture. I'll give you the number of this guy you can go to.
Yeah.
Or you can pray.
You know, and I sat there and I was like, I'm not going to do it. These people at the table all think I'm an asshole anyway. So. Yeah, it's not gonna do any good. But you know, it was just amazing to me because it was like, you know, I there was a recent study that said acupuncture has the same, you know, has the same viability as a placebo. There was nothing better about it.
Mm-hmm. Right. And,
you know, I just found out recently that they actually sell in local drugstores homeopathic treatments for
really?
The
yeah.
flu. It's called, I forgot what it's called. I can't pronounce it. Oscillium. It's a European thing, and all it is massively diluted goose liver fat.
Ooh, sounds delicious.
That they say somehow, because it's diluted so thoroughly, somehow will allow you to avoid getting the flu. And they actually sell it for like $8 a box.
Oh, my God. Here, what? I mean, in the United States or
a price chopper.
Price chopper.
Yeah. I've bought it once before I knew what it was.
Well, that's like a few weeks ago. Again, my coworker sent me the asparagus cures cancer.
Oh, no.
It's like, no, it doesn't.
I had a Christian tell me, a fairly young Christian, just a couple of months ago about a friend of theirs that's going through cancer, and they were trying to decide how to deal with it, and the wife and the husband. So they decided to do it through natural products and not get chemo.
Wow.
And I said, she said, isn't this strange? Isn't it very odd for them to do that? And I said, yeah, that's kind of crazy. Did you encourage them to get chemo? She goes, well, you know, I could understand it if they believed in Jesus and just prayed for Jesus mm-hmm. and prayed to Jesus to get rid of it. I could understand that. Well, what? You just, I mean, they want to do natural things and eat that, and that's not okay with you. But don't get the chemo and just pray to Jesus, and that's okay.
Yeah.
It's like, huh?
Well,
who are these people you know?
Who are they? I don't know.
Rattlesnakes?
I'm not going to tell.
But so let's get that straight.
Okay.
They were advocating
Praying over the natural treatments rather than just saying, hey, why don't you go to the real doctor and get some chemo?
Right, right.
You know, in some ways.
They would understand. They didn't understand the natural treatment of it, but they would have understood if they selected just to pray to Jesus. That would have been acceptable with this person
mm-hmm.
and not get the chemo.
Yeah.
And I said, talk him into getting the chemo.
Yeah, that would be my recommendation as well.
Yes.
Or homeopathy.
Fruit.
Yeah. I knew there was something I liked.
Or eat lots of asparagus.
Yes. Oh, lots of asparagus. Well, I heard broccoli's very good for it, too. I'll go ahead.
I want to say one thing about that. I'm sorry, Marshall.
Let's go ahead. That's fine.
Somebody needs to do a study to see if prayer has the same effect as a placebo. I'm willing to bet that it has less of an effect or the opposite,
they did.
A negative effect.
Well, they did that.
They
yeah,
did.
They did that story.
Right.
The Templeton Fund.
Yeah,
and they they found that the people who knew they were being prayed for because they paid for heart right. patients actually did worse.
Somebody needs to make that a significant amount,
but they did worse than the people who didn't know they were being prayed for.
And somebody needs to make that bumper sticker.
Right.
Prayer
right.
works worse than a placebo.
Right. Right. The ones that were prayed for and not told, and the ones that weren't prayed for did the same.
Yeah, right. Well, speaking of prayer working worse than a placebo, we've got a story out of Fort Worth, Texas. A Dwight Wright, try saying that five times fast, has a feud with Baylor Hospital in Fort Worth, Texas, because his wife, who has had six over the past 5 or 10 years, has had six heart attacks. And he says the only reason she's still alive is because of their constant prayer for her health.
And God gave her the six.
Yeah, which makes me think, how many heart attacks would she have had without the constant prayer?
Whoa. But, tell her what you told me today.
Well, yeah. It's just God is apparently too busy fixing sporting events to help her avoid having heart attacks altogether.
No, he wakes up in the morning and he checks his inbox and he sees if he has any prayers from him. And if not, a couple of heart attacks.
Yeah.
Here they come.
So, but anyway, it goes on. Her latest bout with heart disease has left her with one foot covered in gangrene. She has a gangrenous skin on her foot. And her family is arguing that before the doctors take any action, that they should give prayer a chance to work. They do not want her to lose her foot.
So before they do anything for the gangrene, they're just going to pray.
Well, the doctors want to amputate.
Right. I mean, if she's got gangrene in her foot, it's over.
That's what I mean. Yeah. That's what I was going to say.
She'll be dead soon.
Right.
But they said, no, hold on. Let's give prayer a chance, which I just think is amazing given the track record of prayer in this woman. She's apparently she's 44 and she's already had six 44. Heart attacks.
Oh my gosh, no way.
Seriously.
That's terrible. Wow.
God must really be pissed at her.
Well, I guess, you know, if she's on board with it, then as much as I hate to say it.
But she's not.
Oh, she's not. She wants the treatment?
Yeah, she wants the treatments, but the husband and the family are dead set against it. Apparently, she actually, to make matters worse, she's actually lost her other foot about 10 years ago. Oh. So she'll be full. I mean, this is a horror story.
For a similar type thing?
Yeah, this is.
Oh, my gosh.
This is not a success story for prayer. I'll just put it that way.
So they prayed for her 10 years ago about her other foot and she lost it?
I'm sure they were praying for her.
She wants the treatments. So I'd be looking at my family and go, I love you guys, but screw you guys. Well, cut off my foot.
Unfortunately, this is not working.
I would say, given the track record of the last 10 years, could we not try a prayer this time?
Yeah. Maybe you shouldn't pray for me anymore. Yeah.
God,
no more praying.
Please give Angela a heart attack. That's probably the route they should start going.
Man, that sounds like...
But her husband has medical power of attorney. He does not want her to have an amputation.
Medical.
Is
she conscious?
Yeah, is she conscious and lucid?
They say she's not. The doctors say she is.
Well, I'm not sure what that means. I mean, if the doctors are saying she is, she is.
But he has medical.
If she has gangrene, she's not going to be for long.
But if the doctors are saying she does, then I would think legally she would, and she would be in her right to do whatever she wants.
Her husband's probably a controlling jerk, and probably went and had some psychologist that's friendly with him come in and say she's not making right decisions. That's criminal there.
Yeah.
The doctors want to proceed. He's threatening a lawsuit. He's been banned from the hospital because he threatened to shoot them with a gun.
Who?
So he's a really devout Christian.
The husband.
The husband, Dwight
said
Wright.
He would shoot them with a gun.
Well, he threatened him with a gun. And he says, I admit that I mentioned gun, but I was using it as a metaphor. That's what he said.
As Jesus.
That is, you can tell he's a Christian because that is a very popular Christian argument. But anyway, it's just a crazy story on so many levels. This woman, her health history has just been a train wreck. And the fact that they are still convinced of the healing power of prayer – I just don't know.
Obviously, she's not convinced if she wants to have the treatment and have her other foot amputated.
Yeah.
That sounds like – man, that sounds like she's got like some sort of like congenital like – or, you know, some sort of issue like, I don't know, poor circulation or something.
Something. Six heart attacks.
She needs to start smoking.
Yeah.
Oh, shit. Get it over with quick.
She needs to get life in fast.
Well, it makes me wonder if – she's not in La La Land. Maybe she isn't.
I don't think sound like she is. It sounds like her husband's just probably controlling.
Well, the husband and the family says that she's not with it, that she's not capable of making a sound decision. But, I mean, is it really that bizarre a decision? Ma'am, you're going to die if we don't amputate your toes. Okay. I mean, is that a bizarre decision? At what point is that something that sounds like a crazy person would make?
I don't know.
I could understand if somebody said, I would rather, you know, I'd rather have my legs living, you know, or die.
Right.
I could understand
if
somebody said that.
Yeah, but she's not saying that.
I would be like, you know, you're kind of crazy, but all right.
Exactly,
you know.
Yeah.
But.
Well, that actually goes into something that I just experienced recently in end-of-life matters. I just had my wife's grandmother. She just had a massive stroke, and literally it destroyed the entire left side of her brain. So she was paralyzed. The entire right side of her body was paralyzed. She was 94. She had just had a heart attack, and her family decided to allow her to go. You know, take her off life support and just let her go.
Could she speak?
She could not speak. Okay. She was – she had some level of alertness, and they could have performed some surgeries, installed a J-tube. I don't know if you guys know what that is, where they feed you through your stomach.
Right, right.
And she would have been home, bedridden and paralyzed for what remained of her life. She was 94 and really did not have that much time left to go. So I actually agreed with the decision made by her family. But unfortunately, in this country, when you decide to allow a loved one to pass away in these circumstances, what how they accomplish that is by withholding food and water. So this lovely woman went her last 5 days of her life without food or water. And towards the end of her life, she was in excruciating pain. You could just tell, even mm-hmm. though she couldn't speak. If you had been there, you could tell. So
you saw her?
I saw her, yeah. I spent a lot of time with her. Towards the end, I couldn't stay there anymore because it was just too painful to watch.
Did you try to speak to her? Or did?
Oh, well, everyone did, but yeah, at that point, nothing. She couldn't,
yeah.
couldn't hear anything. But what bothers me, obviously,
that felt good.
Is speaking of the negative influences of religion, this really is a phenomenon that could only exist in a religious environment, in my opinion.
I agree.
Yeah, any other –
that's what it's all about.
Well, other nations, even other states in this country tolerate euthanasia, and I think that this would have been a perfect situation for that.
Sure.
Instead, the Christians in this nation believe that starvation and dehydration is the route to go. And another thing that was really odd to me is, you know, they were giving her morphine to sedate her and to ease the pain. But they could only administer that when she was showing signs of experiencing pain.
So wow. She couldn't show she was experiencing pain.
And well, she could. Couldn't. She could.
How would you know she's not experiencing?
Yeah, you wouldn't know if
right.
– but she could. It was pretty obvious she was in pain. But the whole mentality that, oh, my gosh, she could overdose if we gave her too much and that would kill her. You know, oh, no. This notion that you actually had to call a nurse in.
Wow.
You had to have someone there to call a nurse in to administer the morphine.
Jeez.
And, that's insanity.
And it is.
I don't know what kind of discussion we can really have on that. But I wanted to bring it up because, you know, up until last weekend, I kind of supported what was that? The suicide doctor. What was his name?
Oh, Kevorkian. He was kind of, yeah.
He was eccentric, but I understand what motivated him.
I don't. Actually, I think he actually got enjoyment out of watching people die. That's an issue for me. But what he was doing for the people who wanted to die was fine. But yeah, he was getting his kicks out of watching people.
Oh, was he?
Yeah. That's the reason why he was... One of the reasons why he was busted. But from what I understand from the trials, he really liked watching people die.
Oh, wow.
So.
All right. Well, then I rescind my...
I could be wrong, but that is the... And the issue with the money, too, because they were paying him lots of money to come and do it.
Oh, were they?
Oh,
yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Well, perhaps I should have...
That's okay. We'll forgive you.
No, but I'm with you. I'm with you that, you know, I do think that is something that in this country we should have a right to, you know, if you know that's it, if you know, you have, you know, a living will, so to speak, and it says if I'm, you know, half brain dead, don't keep me alive. I mean, I think people think you should be able to say, give me a drug overdose and let me go.
Yeah. Let me go.
There's a lot of soldiers that fight for our country. That enjoy killing people.
Yeah.
Maliciously.
That's true.
That doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, they're not defending themselves or defending us or
right.
any of those other things.
Right. And they still just because they enjoy it.
Right.
Mean, right.
You know, so I would say, you know, Kevorkian was definitely on the brink of,
yeah.
like, you know, not being, I don't know what you would say. That's kind of a moral gray area, in my opinion. But
yeah,
but
well, at the very least, at least he was taking people out who wanted to go. It wasn't like he was, you know, the nurses that are the serial killers that'll go shoot somebody up with, you know.
Well, I also know that he rejected applicants as well because their condition was not terminal.
Right.
Or not immediately terminal. But my whole point is that really in a nation that prizes its freedom and prizes individuality and responsibility, I would almost describe prohibiting euthanasia in a situation that I experienced recently with my grandmother-in-law as un-American, however you want to define that. I think by virtually every definition, it would be un-American. It's just because she certainly, actually, she had expressed in several years ago that she was ready to go. I was there, but regardless,
right.
It was clear that she had no quality of life remaining, and her medical power of attorney, this time a sane person as opposed to the last story, decided, if I kept her alive, it would be for the wrong reasons. So let's go ahead and end this.
Right, right.
And I also know that my mother-in-law would have, had she had the opportunity, despite being a devout Catholic, would have preferred a more dignified and quicker method of ending her life. And it was very painful for her and everyone who was there to watch this this really good, decent woman just go in such a miserable, undignified manner.
It happens all the time.
Yeah. Well, I just went
my
through.
Yeah. Did.
Well, I just went through the same a similar experience. My great grandmother just passed away yesterday. But she wanted to live on. So in that case, wasn't. Yeah,
right.
That was
that's
her
choice.
Choice.
Right.
And luckily for her, thank goodness, she slipped into a coma and was in a coma before she died. So I don't think that there was any chance that she was feeling anything when she went. So we were all thankful for that. That she. She basically went to sleep and just never woke up. But, yeah, I mean, I can't imagine basically starving to death. Because the prognosis for her was basically either she was going to starve to death or she was going to get pneumonia and die. So we were actually pleased that she went into a coma.
Yes, exactly. And it's not the starvation that kills you in that situation. Yeah. It's the going 5 days without water.
Right.
Right.
And I don't know if you've ever experienced dehydration. It's
yeah,
very
yeah.
painful.
I mean, you know, just during the day. I mean,
yeah.
Extreme sweating,
right?
Heat. I've done it once. It's. I mean, you just black out.
Yeah, it's an intensely painful.
Yeah. I'm very sick afterwards, right?
Yeah, and she basically endured that for 5 days. So
my grandfather did the same thing. He had black lung from the coal mines working in it. And he just laid in bed and slowly went away.
Mm-hmm.
Terrible, wasted. Went from 150 pounds to like 130, something like that. And the length of time, he was in 6-8 weeks, something like that. Came back real quick.
Yeah. My grandmother passed away back in August. I think you all might remember.
Mm-hmm.
I did mention it. And one of the interesting things is, you know, being that my entire family is very religious, you know, they all mentioned how thankful they were that my grandmother went peacefully, that, you know, she basically had a heart attack. They did surgery, tried to save her. She was sedated, you know, after the surgery, and then she died a few hours later. You know, and we were all thankful, you know, everybody was saying how thankful they were that she went peacefully, that, you know, she didn't suffer for weeks and weeks and weeks and those sort of things. And I couldn't help but think in the back of my head, oh, no, what would you all have done if she had?
Right.
And
what would you be saying?
Yeah, yeah. What would be going on? And, you know, I mean, it's terrifying to even think about that because I know, you know, if I would bring up, well, you know, I think maybe we need to let her go in a situation like that, I think, you know, my family would have been horrified that I would have had such a suggestion. But it's really disconcerting.
Well, it's kind of like the Terry Schiavo situation where about one third of this country just went crazy over a woman
right.
who autopsies showed had actually been dead for years.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Just the religious views on death in this nation and other nations as well just really baffle me. And and I really do blame religion for the very undignified last days of my grandmother-in-law.
So how come we don't let dogs and cats just
I know, we die. Peacefully
well,
youth.
Why don't we just leave them in a bedroom somewhere? They'll be okay. Put them on a bed. Let them just slowly starve to death. Why don't we do that to them?
Some people do.
Yeah, but most people I know don't. Yeah. I mean, most people.
And it's an option here in this country.
Right, yes. Right. Know? And you that's go and the dog or the cat goes to sleep.
Right. I don't have any problem if a family and, like, you know, if a family and the person actually signs a paper and says, no, I want to be alive till the end. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Right.
You know, I want you to provide me with food. I want you to do anything you can to keep me alive. Mm-hmm. I don't care how much pain I am in. I don't know how much suffering, whatever. I don't have any problem with somebody making that decision.
Yeah, I don't either.
But I have the opposite issue if you want to keep people from making the opposite decision of that.
Right.
Right.
That's not right.
Yeah.
Somebody should be able to say, you know, I don't want to suffer. I don't want to go through all this. And I don't want my family to have to go through it either.
Mm-hmm. Oh, exactly.
And I don't want government telling me that I can't make that decision when it comes to my final days.
Exactly.
You know, that just really bothers me.
Yeah, it always seemed the opposite of freedom.
Yeah.
To me.
You know, I perfectly understand prohibitions on 16-year-old girls who just broke up with their boyfriend committing suicide. You know, you obviously wouldn't want medical officials participating in something like that. But in a terminal illness where we're really – the only thing that person has left is a lot of pain.
Well, certainly. Well, and you wouldn't want the – and you wouldn't want – and 16 – but maybe even like – Granny's 98 and she's in the nursing home and somebody's like, she has Alzheimer's and she didn't want to live like this. So let's, you know, I could see them, you know, and if that person never expressed one way or another, whether they would want to live on in that state, you know, I could see people taking advantage of that for financial gain, things like that too. So I would definitely think that if it were legal, it would definitely have to be something that when you are of sound mind and, you know, that it would be kind of like a donor thing. Like I have on my driver's license, it says I'm a donor. So they automatically know that if I'm toast, take my organs. So maybe it should be like, because I think you can get like what, a non-resuscitate?
Right. The DNR.
And stuff like that too.
Yeah.
That should just be part of that.
True.
Well, let's move on to something more cheerful.
Yeah. Let's not end on this note.
Yeah.
Let's talk about abortion for a moment.
Oh, great. Right.
Hey, yeah.
Actually, I'm serious. We are talking about abortion. Phoenix, Arizona, the bishop of that diocese has just removed a Catholic nun, Sister Margaret McBride, from the role of administrator of a Catholic hospital and excommunicated her or informed her that she had automatically excommunicated herself when she and several other members on an ethics committee at that hospital approved a woman who was in her first trimester of pregnancy, approved her to have a life-saving abortion when they concluded that were she not to have the abortion, she would have died.
And so would the baby, right? Correct?
Oh, yeah. Right. Yeah.
Well, the baby always dies.
Yes.
Right. No. I mean, even if it allowed her to die, took the baby would be dead.
Right.
So anyway, that's just a bizarre decision.
So priest molest kids.
Well, but don't you know the unborn child is more important than the life of the woman.
Right.
You know, I heard this once and I really thought it was an extreme view, but there was a group that was talking about pregnant women and their rights and saying, you know, pregnant women in this country are kind of held hostage by their fetuses. And I thought that was a really odd point of view, but they brought up the point of if a pregnant crack, you know, a woman that's addicted to like cocaine or crack comes into a hospital and says, I'm pregnant and I'm addicted and I don't want to be addicted. How do they solve that? They arrest her and throw her in jail. So that way they keep her away from the drugs. And then when she has the kid, they take her kid away from her for endangering the life of her child rather than putting her into some sort of a treatment program and trying to help her out. And I'm not necessarily saying that it's, you know, that somebody who's in that state would be a fit mother or whatever, but at the same time it's like what you know, it's like if you can't even go in and ask for help in that situation because you're looked at and demonized, and it's like, you know, I kind of agree with that. You shouldn't be held hostage by, you know, something growing inside of you. I don't know.
Yeah. And I'm not that I agree with them. I'm sympathetic to the people who are opposed to abortion. I understand.
I am too.
I understand their argument. I don't agree with the limits that prohibiting it would place on individual freedoms.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand why they oppose it. But to the point where you would actually excommunicate a woman who has no doubt dedicated her entire life to serving the Catholic Church over a decision that really only saved a life. And I mean, the fetus was going – like you said earlier, the fetus was going to die anyway. That just really indicates to me that there is really something going on in the minds of these Catholic leaders. It's like the situation in Brazil. I don't know if you
– Yeah, the what is it, 10-year-old?
The 9-year-old girl.
That couldn't naturally have a baby.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
She was pregnant with twins.
Twins.
Right. Twins.
And they excommunicated the girl, the doctor, and the family member who brought her. And the person they didn't excommunicate was the man who raped her.
Right.
He would think, if you're going to start excommunicating people, at least mention that guy.
I can't understand, out of all these problems with the Catholic Church, how do people still stay in this religion?
I mean,
Marshall.
This and the priest, and it's just, what does that say?
You know, Marshall, the part you don't understand is those children will never feel the loving hand of a priest.
I'm sorry.
This is true. Sorry. They may have saved her life.
And they've got off easy if all they feel is his hand. Oh, that was bad.
Yeah, but you know, it's just so easy.
I know. I, of course, was referring to the priest's foot.
Oh, right. Yeah. Of course.
Never mind.
Dead silence.
I was going to say something and I thought better of it, which I normally don't do, but in this situation I did. But anyway, just another bizarre decision from the Catholic Church. And like I mentioned earlier, this was a situation where the fetus was in its first trimester. I mean, it was just a bundle of cells, really nothing more than that. And they've just completely thrown this woman. I assume that they've excommunicated everyone.
You know, and the thing is she probably did a lot of not just her devotion, but she probably helped and did a lot of things for a lot of people. It sounded like, you know, if she was willing to stick her neck out and do that, it sounds like she actually really cared about the people.
Oh yeah,
and that to me is tragic right there, because you're taking her out of a position where she can actually be of service and help.
Right. Yeah, she was probably fully aware, like you said, of what she had coming to her. And
probably so. And good for her. You know what? Good for her. If I could, I'd walk up to her and shake her hand.
Yeah. Well, I assume it also means that she's no longer a member of the religious community. So she has no backup plan unless she still has family members or something like that. I mean, it's a tragedy on a number of levels.
Well, she may be able to find another religion or another church if she's not, you know, so stuck on Catholicism.
Yeah, but she doesn't have a home now.
True.
She doesn't have a job. Anything. Right. Yeah.
I mean, give us a call, sister. Yeah. Give us a call.
She'll just have to pray to Jesus and he'll provide.
Yes. Well, she's obviously...
She could go for a Unitarian church where she can believe whatever she wants and help out all the people she can...
You know, I don't know any Unitarians.
I do.
I don't either.
I
know.
A couple.
I know a few.
I know. Yeah, very nice people.
Yes, they are.
I believe Thomas Jefferson was a Unitarian.
Yep. Although I hear it's changing somewhat in some areas, but these two people I know are as close to us as you could possibly be.
Yeah, well, a lot of them are atheists. Yeah.
We met when we formed the North Group, just out of coincidence, we were sitting in this little coffee shop and four other women came in. We thought they were there to meet us because we were expecting some people we had never seen. Mm-hmm. And we said, "Oh, are you here to join the Freethinkers?" And she goes, "Freethinkers? What is that? We're from the Unitarian Church down the street." And they joined us. We had the best time. They said, "Well, we're so close to you guys, you know." So it was a blast.
Cool.
And we had really good time.
The Unitarian Church that I went to was the same way. One of the gals that I talked to, and she kind of asked me what my background was, and you know, and I said, "You know, don't believe in God, and I'm an agnostic and all that stuff." She's like, "Oh, me too. That's why I come here." You know, I was like, "Well, all right, that makes perfect sense."
Yeah, it does actually. But I'm still yet to meet a Unitarian.
I'll introduce you to one someday.
Yeah, I mean, the weirdest thing about it, I guess, after talking to a lot of people at the Unitarian Church, was I guess like you, Cole. I think you kind of hinted at this. I was kind of like, "What's what's really the point, guys?
Yeah, I was going to say
that would be my thing. Is like, why? You know, is it just a pretty place or a place where you can come and was it
to me, it's like our groups pretty much. You know, right. I mean, we could get together and sing songs and read stuff that's inspirational for us.
I think it's so funny. I was at a gathering of people, and there was every kind of religion you could think of, from pagans to Wiccans to Unitarians, dance, Hindus, Buddhists, priests, rabbis. And it's amazing to watch who clans with who and who talks with whom. It's so cool. I mean, most of the people, as you move around the room, you know, I just stayed around talking to the pagans and talking to the Unitarians, and I had to make myself get out and talk to other people. It was pretty funny. It's just, there's just so much in common. You know, lack of something, although we all have our weirdness, I suppose.
I feel like you should go down through some sort of list with those people, like what they believe, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like raise the hand, lower the hand.
Right.
Do you believe in God? All right.
No,
do you believe in more
trees.
Than one God?
More than one God. There you go.
Do you believe in trees or God?
Do you think running around nude in the nature is a good thing? Yeah.
It could be.
I once joined the
Christians,
society.
Raise your hand. Come on.
I once joined the Society for Creative Acronyms a long time ago because I heard that Wiccans were easy, Wiccan women.
Oh.
Turns out they weren't nearly as easy as I thought they were.
I knew a witch one time, and she was real easy.
I know several Wiccans, and they are not easy.
I was misinformed.
One of the most interesting women that I've ever one of the most, claimed to be a white witch, or witch, you know, practicing not black witchcraft and this and that. But she just claimed to have abilities beyond most people. She was very spiritual.
Yeah.
Interesting woman. I mean, she was lots of fun. I mean, she was not crazy. She just thought crazy things.
I had a similar experience. I dated a Wiccan when I was in high school and early in college. And she thought she could do things and believe things. And
could she?
No.
No.
Well, I mean, she could, but...
Okay. I thought she could.
Luckily enough, I found out other women did those things as well.
But, they always... Their spells are always so goofy that they think they can cast. Like,
well, this one wasn't
like good
that.
I've just turned the inside of your stomach purple. And it's like, well, how do we know that? You just have to take my word on it, you know.
Oh, have you ever seen Mighty Wind?
No.
No,
a Mighty Wind.
Movie?
Oh, it's a movie, and it's great because they have, and I don't, I'm sure it's probably a fake one, but I can't remember what, they're members of Wink.
Oh, okay.
And they worship color.
Oh.
And it's very amusing, though.
Well, this woman was not, she had this uncanny ability to detect criminals. Her job was a security down at the plaza, and she had this big booth that she could watch people enter the clothing store. And she did. She was very good at it. I mean, she would have people on the floor. You watch this person, watch that person. And she was right most of the time. So because of that ability, not knowing that she just was good at it, she was maybe an ex-criminal.
She's a witch.
But she thought, right, she thought that she had that was really weird. We used to like to drink Jägermeister and beer together. That was pretty fun. And I saw lots of spirits then.
Speaking of women who are a little on the odd side, I don't know if anyone here saw Sarah Palin's recent interview on the O'Reilly Factor.
I try not to watch anything.
I don't watch anything with political commentators. So.
Well, I normally don't either, but sometimes the things that she says are so absurd.
Oh, I know.
And I'm not saying this as a criticism of conservative politics or anything like that. I'd like to think that if I were conservative, and on some issues I am, that I would still find her a complete moron.
So stupid, Alaska doesn't even want you.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, sorry, Alaska. Sorry.
And actually, that's true. A recent poll indicated that if she were to run for governor again, she would not win.
Oh, I'm sure.
Yeah. Why someone would spend the money to run that poll, I don't know. But
go to YouTube and type in Bill Maher on Palin. Oh, it's funny.
Oh, I love Bill Maher.
It's so
when he's sane, he occasionally.
I was
going to
say
off.
I can't really get behind him.
I like him.
He's way into the woo, and it bothers me.
He's funnier than hell, though.
Yeah, and just like Hitchens.
Religious was
people.
Good.
Religious.
Everything else that I've seen by him just annoys the piss out of me.
But he's done some hilarious things on religion. I can't listen to him when he's talking about vaccines.
Oh, I don't. Like I don't listen to anything except for religion with him.
Everything
even,
else.
Even Hitchens, I don't like to listen to him except for about religion. When it gets to politics and war and all this,
I disagree.
I won't even watch it. You know,
I disagree with him on everything but religion.
It spoils everything. Yeah, me too. And so it spoils the parts that I like with Bill Maher, and so I just don't.
Well, anyway, back to Sarah Palin. She was commenting on the recent judicial ban on the National Day of Prayer, which, having reviewed the matter, I can now. I was kind of a non-committal on the constitutionality of that. I am now certain that it is unconstitutional because. Having read up on the Establishment Clause.
It's good to have you back, Marshall.
Yeah. Well, I was pretty sure it was, but not being a not being a scholar on the Constitution, I hate to come out and say it is unconstitutional and then find out I didn't know what the hell I'm talking about. But it is. I mean, there was absolutely no secular reason for there to be a National Day of Prayer, and that's one of the stipulations. But anyway.
Approved by the government anyway, or sanctioned by the government, should it be.
Or paid for.
No money is paid for it, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That's all unconstitutional. But when asked why she thinks America is a Christian nation, because she is convinced that America is a Christian nation, and she considers Obama a traitor for saying that it isn't a Christian nation. She said,
why doesn't that surprise any of us?
And I assume that she's one of those individuals who considers him the Antichrist as well. But I don't really.
Oh, God. I went over this already. He can't be.
Yeah,
right?
No.
He can't be.
He can't be. No.
Yes, he's not a Jew.
Yeah.
That we know of.
By your own book, he can't be. That's it.
So here's what she had to say when asked why she thinks that America is a Christian nation. And I'm trying to debate whether I should try to imitate her voice.
Go ahead. I want to hear it.
It's almost – you can't read anything she said without doing it.
Okay, do it.
So it's going to be horrible. I have said all along that America is based on Judeo-Christian beliefs, and you can just go to our founding fathers' early documents and see how they crafted the Declaration of Independence, you know. And she didn't actually say, you know. I'm not butchering this. I'm just going to proceed in my normal voice. How they crafted the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution that allows the Judeo-Christian belief to be the foundation of our lives.
Does she know what self-evident means?
Apparently not.
Has she read the Constitution?
Not only that, but I believe it refers to nature's God specifically.
Yeah, it does.
Yes.
Yeah, the God of nature.
Right. Yes. Yes.
And in the Treaty of Tripoli, it plainly states we are not – Christianity.
Well,
that was our third, wasn't it?
But here's where she proves her that she is in fact a constitutional scholar. And our Constitution, of course, essentially acknowledges that our unalienable rights don't come from man; they come from God. And as a result, she concludes that the United States was established to be a Christian nation. She goes on to say about the founders of the nation, they're quite clear that we would create a law based on the God of the Bible and the Ten Commandments.
Where did she come up with that?
She pulled it out of her ass. I'm sure that's what someone told her. But first of all, I haven't read the entire Constitution, but I do know that it makes no mention of God,
right.
Or anything religious, really. And this notion that it was intended to be a Christian document. But they apparently forgot to mention Jesus during the entire document, or even God.
Mm-hmm.
It's just absurd. And to say that it was based upon – that the Constitution intended this country to be based upon the Ten Commandments really means that the First Amendment should not be in there.
Right.
Because four of the commandments are about worshiping God. You know, the first four. Well, no, wait a minute.
Three.
Well, I was just going to say, you can throw out, half of them, right? Because most of them are about, you know, the only ones that really apply are don't kill, don't steal, and, you know.
Well, you can be an adulterer.
You can be an adulterer. That's not a crime. You don't have to honor your mother and your father either. It makes you maybe a jerk, but it's not criminal.
All right. I just want to read the preamble to the Constitution, okay? Just so we can just lay this to rest. We the people
of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice, ensure domestic tranquility, provide for the common defense, promote the general welfare, and secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, do ordain and establish the Constitution for the United States of America.
Yep.
We do it ourselves.
Yes, exactly. We the people.
Well, I understand that there were individuals who did want to mention things of a religious nature, and those were rejected at the time of the when it was voted on.
I really liked the way it was done in the John Adams series.
Yeah.
Because it was, I think it was the guy who played Benjamin Franklin. They were talking about the Declaration of Independence, mm-hmm. and they were all throwing out some ideas, and he was sitting there, and Benjamin Franklin goes, "Nope, I don't like that line. It smacks of the pulpit." Take
yep.
it out.
Yep. It's exactly, yeah.
And
who knows if he actually said that, but.
Yeah, who knows if he did, but you know what? Thank goodness he was there.
Well, and I love how she wants us to believe that the Constitution was a Christian document when it approves of slavery, which is actually one of the few things in the Constitution that is approved of in the Bible. And it's not mentioned by the Ten Commandments, but it is specifically endorsed in the Bible. So anyway, I just thought that was interesting, that she has no connect with reality whatsoever.
Yeah, I just did a text search. No God in the Constitution.
Mm-mm.
I was going to say, I don't even think religion is really mentioned all that much, except for maybe the Establishment Clause and the
First Amendment. I mean, outside of the sections where they banned religious requirements on anything or religious endorsements, religion or God is not mentioned anywhere in the Constitution.
And the thing is, too, that frustrates me with this is that people like her don't understand that it was written that way to protect everybody.
Mm-hmm.
If this was a theocracy, there's no guarantee that their brand of Christianity would be okay to practice. And they don't get that. They don't understand that it protects everybody, including them.
Well, yeah. In fact, if Christianity were to become law in this country, it would probably be the Catholics, since they're the largest mm-hmm. Christian denomination. Mm-hmm. Even though a lot of Christians don't consider them Christians, they are by far the largest Christian denomination in the world and in this country. And it would probably be them who were the bishops who were making the decisions. They like to pretend that's not true, though. Well, anyway, let's move on to another topic. A North Dakota atheist, Brian McGee, who is a co-host of a atheistic radio show in North Dakota, which surprises me that North Dakota would have such a thing, attempted to get a driver's license, a personalized driver's license, a vanity plate, that read, "Is no God," and he was denied. They would not do that.
Hmm.
Despite having allowed license plates that read, "I love God," and other license plates with various religious messages.
What was the reason for it?
I am quite certain they did not give a reason, but I can speculate on the reason.
Yeah.
Yeah, they didn't approve of the message,
right.
You know.
But that's, I don't know.
It's not – the thing is, though, is he can totally take him to court because
sure.
There's nothing vulgar about it because, you know, like people – obviously you can't get a vanity plate with a cuss word on it or something that people would think of as offensive. But, you know, that to me – and what does it say? It says, is no God.
Is no God.
Is no God. I mean, you can take that to mean all kinds of things. Sure. Like, I is no God. You know, or I mean, you could, know, yeah. Seriously. I mean, it, to me,
you
that's,
is no God.
You is no God. Yeah.
You could say, because you know? It's supposed to mean I snog odd.
Yeah, you know. I mean, yeah. But seriously, I mean, you know, that would be my case. How do you know that's what? How do you know I'm saying, you know, there is no God?
Yeah, and that wouldn't be my case. My case would be, yeah, it means there is no God. You know, what's your justification for not allowing me to make this? Because it follows all the laws.
Right.
As far as the number of letters and everything mm-hmm. like that.
I wouldn't be surprised if Dan Barker doesn't get a hold of this.
Yeah, you know, and it doesn't seem like a major thing, but this is clearly a situation where a government really is making a decision based on religious preference?
It isn't a major thing, and I think that's what's turned it into a big thing, is that it's a license plate, a personalized license plate. Mm-hmm. It's no big deal. You should be able to get whatever the hell you want.
Right.
And if the government feels comfortable dictating what your license plate, your vanity plate says, you know, barring profanity and things like that, if the government feels comfortable telling you, no, you can't have that because
we'll let you promote religion, but we won't let you promote non-religion.
Oh, yes.
Which is basically a that's a violation of separation of church and state.
It absolutely
and
is.
And therefore, he should be able to get his driver's license or his driver's plate on his car.
I would imagine this gets resolved before it makes its way to the Supreme Court. I would hope that the state of North Dakota, as religious as it is, apparently would just consent to make the license plate, but. It's like I said, it's not a major issue, but in a sense, it kind of is. It's just another indication of I don't know if I'd say religious bigotry, but
yeah. But I mean, also, I think it's like on both sides, be it the free thinking side or the religious side, is that a hill you want to die on? A license plate?
Yeah, not really.
Maybe in North Dakota. I mean, maybe there's not much going on there.
Right. Well,
well, and that's like things right. too. For instance, too. I wonder how many people that have the Jesus fish on their car or bumper stickers that say "I love Jesus" have their cars vandalized because my mother had the Darwin fish on her car, and granted, nobody did anything terribly damaging to her car, but she had gum stuck on her car. She had notes left on her car saying they were going to pray for her.
funny.
for one little thing on her car, which I don't like bumper stickers very much at all myself, but that's one of the main reasons why that keeps me from putting anything like that on my vehicle, because I feel like it's not going to be safe sitting out in the parking lot. Somebody's going to come up and mess with it because it's,
I agree. Blair Scott, he's a perfect example in Georgia, Alabama. He's had his car keyed 2 times.
Has he really?
All the way around. He's had every piece of glass at one time or another broke out of his vehicle, headlights, taillights, back windows, side windows. He has had his trash dumped in his yard. He has I'm an atheist, I think, on his license plate, and he's got a Darwin and fish and – but, yeah, he's talked to me maybe 6-7 times. He's had his car damaged somewhere or another.
That's just, that baffles. And then it goes into the whole, Christians are so much more moral than, mm-hmm. than atheists. Mm-hmm. Ooh, yeah, you're going to go around and hurt and mess up somebody's car.
Why else would it be key? Why else would these things happen? I mean, he's so blatant with I am an atheist and other things he has on his car. There is no other reason why it would be done like that.
Right.
It's amazing. I mean, when you see fish on the back of a car, do you want to go key it? Do you want to bash in their windows?
Certainly not.
No, I feel sorry for them.
I just think, wow, so you really want to advertise what you believe on the back of your car.
So what?
Mm-hmm. I guess that's the reason why I don't put stuff on my car because I'm like,
I don't either. I'm the same way.
Same thing with political views. I'm like, I see the political bumper stickers and I'm like, are you really sure you want to, publicize your political beliefs on a bumper sticker?
And it stays there until you get rid of the car.
Right. Yeah, I know.
3 elections later and it's still there. I love Bush.
See, what I wish is somebody would come out with little Darwin, the Darwin fish.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
They would come out with just the little legs.
Mm-hmm.
So when you saw somebody with one of those on their car, you could just be like, bloop. And put little legs on it.
That's cool. That's a good idea.
I know a friend who owns a vinyl shop that actually could probably cut us little feet.
Yeah. I know, that but you can get in a lot of trouble. But
but that would be trouble. So
what?
Funny.
10 years in pen?
Can you actually sell something that the only purpose for is to vandalize another person's car?
You can sell whatever the heck you want, man.
The vinyl peels off really easy and it leaves no residue.
You're
it
right.
does not harm the finish of the car because it's made for that.
So if you did that,
it's actually probably easier to get off than the bumper sticker.
Yeah, and it was non-harmful, then what would the crime be?
That would be funny.
I think my favorite one, because I was just trying to see if anybody made these out on the internet, and nobody does that I could find.
Oh, that's
but
too
my
good.
Favorite one is there is the little decal, the little silver
sure.
colored decal that you can do, and it's the Darwin fish doing the Christian fish.
Oh. I've seen that one.
That is good.
Yep.
So what would it be, the babies?
Yeah. That's a good question. I don't know. It's something we've never seen before. It evolved.
All right, let's move on to something.
Where are we on time?
Oh, we're over an hour.
Oh, we are?
Yeah.
Oh, I wanted to get to this.
Well, do it.
Well, we can
do
it. All right.
In New York City, they're running billboards and bus advertisements.
Again?
Again, believe it or not, they're doing that.
Who's this by? Is this COR or is this Dawkins stuff? Is it Philadelphia Group?
You're just jumping the gun on this one. It has nothing to do with these people.
Oh, it doesn't?
You know, it's this, I believe it's a Christian organization called Stop Islamization of America. And they have a website called Refugee from Islam. And the billboards and the signs say, leaving Islam, fatwa on your head, is your family threatening you? And then it has a website you can go to and escape Islam.
Wow.
And I don't have a problem with it, to be honest with you.
I don't either.
I don't – but what – it does really demonstrate the hypocrisy of your average Christian, though, who sees the
right.
good without God billboard and thinks they're being persecuted.
Yes.
And that,
yes.
You know,
it's very hypocritical.
That they're one step away from being killed by the atheist agenda. And then they run this, which, again, like I said, I have no problem with. I wouldn't have a problem if they had one targeting atheist who wanted to leave atheism or something. That's their right.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's just it. You know, that's the thing about signs that always bugged me was when they say, oh, I'm so offended by, like, the one that we had up that says, don't believe in God, you're not alone.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, oh, that's offensive to Christians.
It's
I'm like,
hate speech.
Why?
I've heard it described as hate speech.
I'm like, why? It's not a message for you, obviously.
Right.
You know, if you don't – if you believe in God, don't go to the website. It's really that simple.
I don't know. Yeah. It's crazy.
Well,
it's
and as you might imagine, Muslims in New York are not too happy with these signs, and they're describing them as hate speech, which they might even have a case for that. I mean
– well, especially if – they are called the, you know, organization for, you know, against the Muslim, yeah,
the
whatever it was.
Islamization
of America. Yeah, I could see them having a little bit of a beef with that. But
I understand why they're upset with it, but I think it should be allowed to continue.
Sure.
Yes.
And I think that the Muslims should be able to put up signs saying, leaving Christianity.
Exactly. They should put them side by side.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. And that, you know, you can't stop these people. It is their free speech,
mm-hmm.
in
right?
essence, to say what it is. Now, it may be ridiculous. It may be, you know, hateful or anything else you want to choose. But I think on our little email forums and everything like that, you stated it, Jen, about hate speech and how it's what do you define as hate speech and what do you not define as it?
Right.
It is extremely problematic because anybody can say, I don't like that. You said that against me. I feel that it's hate speech.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Well, and the good thing about hate speech, real hate speech, is that more often than not, it's self-defeating. That the person who hears the message is really repulsed by it. I mean, that's why we all know Fred Phelps.
Mm. Yeah.
Is because he has probably done more to contribute to the homosexual agenda or to homosexual, you know, to the cause of gay and lesbians. I was just joking about the homosexual agenda.
Yeah.
The gay and lesbian movement in this country than any other factor.
Oh, yeah. They help raise that message up there, and it helps people go, wow, this guy's a jerk. I don't want to be like this
guy. Yeah, you don't want to be associated with him. So if you go out and say you're opposed to homosexuality, you know, you're worried, oh, I don't really want to be endorsing that message anymore and get lumped in with this nutcase. So anyway, I say more power to the people who want to put up these ridiculous signs. I think it's their right. I think it's our right to put up signs.
that says they're ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, that would be so funny. Have the Christian one and the Muslim one side by side and the and atheist one on top that says, tired of all this?
Join us.
Oh, maybe we should contact an Islamic group to work with us on that.
Oh, that's too funny.
So, all right.
We have a big smiley face.
Yeah.
I guess we have to wrap it up. Howard's hungry.
Okay.
No, I'm not hungry. I already ate.
Oh, okay. So, all right. Well, thank you for listening to another episode of the Agnostic Salvation Hour.
Good night.
Good night.
See you later.
Bye. Or whenever you're listening.